things. We have now taken over your radio.
Mike Schaefer.
See, I would argue, because I like to argue.
We all underestimated how hard it is to, one, win college football games, and two, transition and take over a program.
Mike Schaefer.
I was trying to kindly tell Mr. Bishop the Vikings have a chance to surprise some people, and I think that they could even win the division.
Mike Schaefer.
It doesn't seem like the kind of book where they would be hooked on meth. That got dark.
Mike Schaefer.
There he is, Mike Schaefer, ladies and gentlemen. Husker 24/7 Sports. Happy almost opening day, Schaefer.
Yeah, this is exciting. The season is upon us. I feel like it kind of snuck up on me this year. There's like a bunch of other things sort of going on. I haven't paid as much to spring training as I have in recent years. Then Cleveland's out there spending all that Dolan money they've been sitting on for the last five seasons, spending it on Andrés Giménez. I mean, I didn't see that coming. So I'm like weirdly optimistic for the baseball season. So,
well, I mean,
bad things are about to happen.
You should be. They are the defending AL Central champs, and you know, looked pretty good last year in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have the ability to win 100 games this year. I really do. Which means they're probably going to go 75 and whatever the opposite of that is. Josh, what's the opposite of 75? Is it 87?
87, yeah, 75 and 87. Do you are you real excited for the pitch clock stuff? Like, some baseball fans that I talk to are like, yeah, well, and then others are like really pumped for it. Where do you fall?
I mean, if you look at the time, and spring training is going to be a little bit different, so maybe add another 10 minutes to it. But if they're getting these games done at, you know, 2 hours and 45 minutes, but that's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that is such an improvement. Obviously, we'll see if it sticks like this, but even just the idea of improving that pace and the players, I think, will sort of get used to it. It feels like it's something that will only get better. And then there's certain pitchers that were already fast paced workers to begin with that, you know, I think Cleveland had a game with the Rockies the other day, and it was in the bottom of the ninth inning before the 2 hour mark. So, I mean, there's a chance that we're seeing this sport absolutely fly. You're not going to be able to, rely on the whole, oh, it takes 4 hours to play six innings thing. People have to find a new complaint. Mm. I'm sure they will.
Oh, I'll baseball find new ones. Don't worry. Yeah.
Baseball seems to have those in spades.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll take it. Look, if you can guarantee me the game ends inside a 3 hour window, I'm good with that, because chances are I'm probably popping out and doing other stuff during that time anyways.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. So going back to yesterday, we heard from Coach Rhule. We heard from a couple of the players as well, including Jeff Sims. We'll have some of that audio coming up. Do you think the offensive line question all of a sudden is kind of, you know, perked my interest? Now, granted, it's not that I was expecting the offensive line to be great, but the numbers, only 12 so far. Do you think that may put a damper on these expectations that some have and that some have promised that the spring game is going to look more like a football game?
Yeah, I mean, it could. They have, you know, depth issues on both sides of the line. So,
right.
Like, how much can you really reasonably expect? Also, it's a spring game. The format that you get is the format that you get, and we have to live with it. Like, that's just – it's not 1996 anymore. I know that comes as a shock to some people, but I think at some point we just have to acknowledge that the spring game is a practice. There could be some 7-on-7. There could be some good-on-good. There could be some bad-on-bad. Who the hell cares? It's a spring game.
No, I would agree. But then from the overall numbers standpoint, I mean, it kind of crept, you talked about baseball creeping up on you. It kind of crept up on me.
Same.
How all of a sudden you just kind of assumed, yeah, there's at least 15, 16, 17 guys, but with walk-ons, there's only 12.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an area where they're going to get an influx of some additions in the summer. They're certainly going to be looking to add in the transfer portal if there's a name or two that makes sense there. Which is, you know, remarkable, because they still have to cut to get to 85 as it is anyway. So, I think one of the unsung parts of this transition is that there's a big roster imbalance right now. I mean, you have, what, 25 scholarship defensive backs, I think?
Yeah.
I've seen that number thrown out or somewhere in there.
There's 24.
They have, like, four scholarship wide receivers. Like, it's there's stuff that just has to, you know. That's why we're hearing things about A.J. Rollins switching from tight end to defensive line. And, you know, Jaleel Martin switching from defensive back to wide receiver. Because this is a time right now this spring for them to sort of experiment and figure out, okay, what do we have? Where can we take from a surplus? Who's got athleticism? Who wants to do it? And not just saying, yeah, I'll try it out. So I think that, you know, that as much as anything is really important. And their offensive line is going to be a work in progress until we get to that first game. And it's probably going to be a work in progress during the season. They're probably going to start somewhere around 8 or 9 different guys, I bet, by the end of the year. That's just kind of the reality of where they're at. So I think, you know, certainly that offensive line is just going to be kind of a cloudy picture, I guess, all the way, you know, up until we're in the season, I would think.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Shafe, if you just said work in progress up to the start of the season and probably during the season. I just wonder if, because of the number of bodies and, you know, maybe changing the way in which they're trying to operate on that side of the ball, and I guess we could look at the defensive line too, if this is going to just be a work in progress for, I mean, that we're going to still be talking about it next year as like, okay, can they start getting those bodies? Can they up the numbers and can they up the talent level, you know, on those position groups?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be you can, I don't know, wherever Grimm is at, set this aside, play the audio in December. We're going to be talking about Nebraska needing to go into the portal and add defensive linemen and add offensive line capable players next year. And we're going to be doing it again, or excuse me, next December. And we're going to do it again in December of 2024. And we're probably going to be doing it again unless this really works. Because there's no real team around the country that gets to feel like they have a surplus of great line play anymore. I just think that that's kind of the reality. And if Nebraska can just find, you know, reliable guys in between there and kind of paper over it until they can really fully put their stamp on this thing, I just think it's going to take a lot of time. I mean, I it's difficult because when there's a transition like this, what you want to believe is that Nebraska could be TCU and then it's just going to magically click together and they could have this great season.
Yeah.
But there's still a team that's won. Let me do the math on the fly here. There's still a team that's won what, 8 games over the last 2 seasons and throw in
7 over the last 2 seasons.
Yeah. 7.
Oh yeah. They went 3-9.
Yeah.
And
10 over the last 3 seasons.
I tried to give them that Michigan State game or something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a reason beyond just Scott Frost's coaching on Saturdays as to why they didn't win as many games. Like, it's still a flawed team. Like, it's one of the things that, you know, you kind of have to not guard against, but there's so much enthusiasm and hype and excitement that you kind of also have to step back and look and be like, look, they have holes on this roster right now. And they only have so much time to get them ready for when they start off with a pretty tough stretch of Minnesota, Colorado. When you're talking about transitioning to a new regime, like I wouldn't be surprised at all if you know, midway through the season, we're talking about how their struggles that they have in the trenches. Like I think both the offensive line and defensive line are a concern. Now, that being said, the offensive line at least has guys that were recruited relatively highly that you're hoping that with consistency and maybe some play calling that lines up with an identity that they can develop in a way that they haven't. I mean, I'm not giving up hope on Turner Corcoran or Henry Lutovsky or guys like that, but, you know, it's sort of at the point where even just like a marginal improvement from where they were last year would be substantial.
Mike Shafer joining us from Husker 24/7 Sports. Certainly, and it's not that position changes are a foreign concept. We see it all the time, especially in the spring. It's the perfect time to do it. Do you think, though, that this is going to be something that's going to be even more common under Matt Rhule? I understand this year, because of some of the wonkiness in the position groups and how many you have on scholarship in each category, but with the recruitment and the heavy recruitment of athletes, just finding, you know, specific athletes and then finding a place for them, that we could see these new gray shirts become a more common thing over the years versus a less common thing.
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting idea. It's hard to say with any certainty, you know, because You have to assume that when they're recruiting these guys, whether it's a Bryce Turner or a Jeremiah Charles or even a Malachi Coleman, who all kind of fit in that category, Jalen Lloyd, they probably have a general idea of where they want to start them out at. How often those guys end up moving, it sort of remains to be seen. So I guess I sort of see where you're going with it. And at the same time, I'd just be somewhat cautious that a lot of this sort of feels like, okay, A.J. Rollins probably isn't going to play at tight end. We need bodies at defensive line. It's someone that flashed as a defensive lineman in high school. Do we try this? You know, so it's kind of hard to say, but just using recent programs as an example, there was always at least a couple position changes under Scott Frost every offseason. There's always at least a couple under Mike Riley. So it seems to reason that there would still be some under Matt Rhule. Now, is it, you know, two or three, or is it 13? Like there's probably a middle ground between those two numbers, but you know, there's a pretty big difference between those two things.
Shafe, recruiting, you have talked about and you've written about the timeline, I guess, of what you thought Dylan Raiola's commitment could be. In your opinion, why do you think that has changed, and how does that maybe play into the potential non-visit now for the spring game next month? And I know there's been some words about that, him maybe not visiting, Oregon as well at the end of April.
Yeah, I mean, we just have to kind of see what's next with Dylan Raiola. The great thing is we have not we haven't really had to spend a lot of time in the dark as it relates to whatever Raiola is doing. It's pretty well covered and well documented. So
sure,
I think we'll know kind of what's going to happen with that and what the path is going forward. But yeah, I mean, I was very confident in February just based off the information that I had that Nebraska was going to likely end up with a commitment in late March, early April. And we're now in that timeline, and I would certainly tell you that I don't feel anywhere near that confidence anymore. So as to what changed, you know, externally, all I can look at is that visit to USC seemed to really sort of bring them back into the mix. I mean, they felt like they were kind of out of it. At one point in time, it seemed like Georgia was then became the third team. And now maybe they're back squarely in this mix. It just seems like he takes these visits and then it's just, the team that he most recently visited moves up to the front of the line, and we're just kind of doing this domino thing. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that's going to continue. I sense a lot of sort of discontentment from some in the Nebraska fan base that they want this to be over at this point,
yep,
that they're now getting tired of all the coverage of it, to which I just kind of have to smile, because there's nobody that wants to be involved more in recruiting and wants to get the best players in the country than this fan base. And sometimes that, you know, you got to wait. You got to be patient. You got to deal with this. I mean, a great example, Arch Manning made his decision, which nobody really knew what he was going to do until late June. I mean, so that's the best comparison right now for Dylan Raiola. And I'll admit, I was wrong. I mean, the information that I operated off of was wrong. I mean, it basically was intimated to me that this could happen, and this would, you know, if it does happen, it's going to happen at the end of March, early April. And it just, that information at the time in February said one thing, and what we know now at the end of March is something else. That doesn't mean that I'm backing off of Nebraska's chances with them, though. I still think there's certain things that they have that couldn't be matched by USC or Georgia. I certainly think that their NIL is going to be as competitive, if not the most competitive offer that he's going to get. And then you just throw in the fact that it's kind of his dad's school, and their involvement with everything Nebraska-related recruiting-wise is so much further than what we've seen with Georgia and USC. Yeah, he's talking to guys when he's on those visits, and he might tell them that he's going to be in town, but he was actively pushing for people to make last weekend their visit weekend because he was going to be there. So I don't know that he's doing that with Georgia or USC.
People forget he could wait. He could hold this out until December if he wanted to.
That's true.
I mean, or February.
He wouldn't be the first. February would be absurd, and I don't think that's going to happen. But
right,
he wouldn't be the first, you know, recruit to push things out into after his high school season. The difference that occurs here is he's a quarterback, and so
yeah,
people get really antsy about it. And then, of course, the expectation is that if he were to commit wherever he commits, there's going to be a flock of followers that'll commit right after. And I guess to the point on that, like as Nebraska recruits a Gatlin Bear or a Nate Frazier or Brandon Baker or Ryan Wingo or Williams Nwaneri or whoever, they can't do it with the idea that Dylan Raiola is going to be their quarterback at this point. Like, they have to have other pitches, and they do. And that's why those guys, when they left this weekend, all of them have had great things to say about Nebraska that didn't even have anything to do with Dylan Raiola. Because the idea is you're using Dylan Raiola to get them to campus, and maybe you strike up the million and one relationship, and a Nate Frazier leaves thinking about Nebraska in a way that he never had before, and you end up with a running back in this class, even if you don't end up with Dylan Raiola. Like, that's how recruiting goes. I mean, I just think that there's been a sort of misconception that this whole thing's going to be a failure if they don't end up with Dylan Raiola. He's a big part of it, but he's not the only thing. And he certainly, you know, Nebraska isn't going to shut down its program if they don't get this kid.
Speaking of a big part of it, he obviously was a big part of last weekend, but he was not the only part of last weekend. When do you think the fruits of this past weekend could show for Nebraska in terms of commitments?
I think they've got several guys that are going to commit probably this month that we're here. We're still in March.
Yes.
Next month.
Over the next month.
Yeah.
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 And, you know, there's a handful of guys that already basically, you know, without saying exactly when, either intimated or straight up told me that they have set up official visits for Nebraska in June. So if the idea was, and these are people that had never visited before. So if the idea is you get them out for the first time to set up the second time, it's been a pretty fruitful, I think, exercise already. You just have to get there. You know, you have to survive everything in between. There's some of the challenges, you know, for Nebraska when you're trying to recruit a Brandon Baker or a Nate Frazier or a Gatlin Bear or whoever, you know, you guys pick the names. Unless they're in the surrounding states, they probably can't just drive over whenever they want. So, you know, getting to that second visit then becomes the thing. Like, Nebraska's got to go out and see them when the evaluation period starts. The coaches have to be on the phone with them. They have to continue to build and cultivate the relationship that really, truly started for some of these guys over the weekend.
Do we sometimes overestimate the possibility that just because Raiola commits, that's going to be a Pied Piper effect? I mean, I'm sure there'll be a few, but maybe this will have more of an impact in future years than it will necessarily this year, especially if he holds off until later.
I think it's a stone being thrown into a pond. It's just going to have ripple effects that continue all the way out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there'll be certainly the ones that are close to it. I mean, Nebraska's chances with a guy like Ryan Wingo go way up if you have Dylan Raiola. And, you know, he's probably of everyone. He's probably the one that I would consider least likely if they don't get Dylan Raiola. But I think that they could end up with a Gatlin Bear or a Nate Frazier regardless. The two, Elijah Newby came out from Connecticut. The Smith brothers came out from Connecticut. They're not affiliated with Dylan Raiola. They came out because EJ Barthol and Nebraska have done a really nice job recruiting them. And so they wanted to see it. Now, getting those the twins would be a hell of a pull. But maybe you end up with Elijah Newby, who could be a great edge prospect for you. So I just think that there's certainly people that could be directly tied to him, but it's smaller than you think. Like, there's still guys that they could end up with that would be excited if Nebraska got Raiola, but it isn't the only reason why they'd consider Nebraska.
Hey, Shafe, last week when you filled in, we talked a lot about, you know, college basketball, and we looked ahead, of course, to the Sweet 16 games, the Elite Eight. I wonder, as someone who, you know, really covers college football and college football recruiting and kind of knows in the end, you know, what the playoff usually is going to bring, and now you see March Madness and it's culminating with a modern blue blood, if you will, in UConn, and then three other teams that, like, they don't fit into any of those kind of neat buckets that we try to define before the tournament begins. Like, do you like this ending versus the one we normally get, or do you like that the college football model does result normally in the four best teams and the two best teams playing for the title versus, like, these were not the four best teams in the regular season?
Yeah, you know, admittedly, I'm a bizarre individual, so I'm more excited about this Final Four than last year, where it was Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, and
Villanova. Yeah.
You know, there was people that basically viewed that as the greatest Final Four in the history of the entire sport, which is idiotic, but, wow. You know, everyone's allowed to have their own opinion. So I honestly, you know, I sat in that chair, well, the one that Josh is occupying.
This one.
I sat in that chair a couple of weeks ago, and I talked about how, like, my enthusiasm for the tournament it just kind of felt like it's sort of washed away. Well, you know what saved it? It had nothing to do with any individual names or teams. The basketball has been incredibly good. Like, the drama has been great. you know, like three of these Final Four teams, UConn aside, and they look like a massive favorite compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
The other three teams all theoretically could have or should have lost their first game of the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, Drake had Miami basically pinned to the mat, and the guy got the shoulder up at 2.9, you know, and then I use a professional.
That's a wrestling term.
I know what it is.
You know, and then you had Florida Atlantic was trailing to Memphis with 5 seconds left, and they didn't have the ball.
Yeah.
And they won that game. Like, it's just improbable for these teams to make a run, but the drama has been great, and the quality of basketball has been great. Like, that Florida Atlantic Kansas State game was great. Kansas State Michigan State was great. Like, we've been so blessed. UCLA Gonzaga was an incredible finish.
Yeah.
We've just been so blessed with great basketball that I hope it continues. I mean, one of the reasons I always get down on the Final Four is it feels like you get a lot of blowouts. Like, you don't usually, you know, the UCLA Gonzaga game is not normal, like the one that they had a couple years ago.
Yeah, the semifinals usually aren't very good.
Yeah, I mean, so I hope that these games are good. I think that Florida Atlantic SDSU game could be, you know, just a brawl between two junkyard teams if they want to.
Oh, it will.
I don't know that aesthetically it's going to be, you know, the prettiest basketball, but I expect it to be pretty dramatic. I just also think that I wouldn't be surprised if UConn wins by 15, wins by 25.
Yep.
And they just completed the most dominant run tournament history. And we should have maybe seen it coming because they were probably underseeded. But at the same time, I'm kind of stunned because it wouldn't have surprised me if they went out in round two, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, you're right, though. The basketball has been really good. It's been a lot of fun to watch this whole tournament.
It gets me excited, you know? Like, I feel like I've gotten really down on college basketball. And some of it is the team that I mostly follow. I had to combine 9 wins, I think, you know, between a 2-year stretch there. So it's hard to get overly enthusiastic, but you know, it's nice to get excited again about the sport and to just find different teams to kind of latch onto. Like, I feel like I've been watching Florida Atlantic for a lot longer than a couple week stretch, but it, you know, I just sort of popped into the end of what's a miraculous season for them. And now I'm along for the ride. It's great.
And the ride begins for baseball tomorrow.
Baseball.
Who do the Guardians baseball open against?
I believe they are out in Seattle against former producer Stibbs Mariners.
Oh, go Seattle.
To start the
wow.
The Mariners are my first favorite baseball team. Ken Griffey Jr.
Again?
What?
You and your...
I thought that you were done with that city, but...
yeah, I did
nice.
Too.
Nice, Shafe. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, out on Seattle. Go Cleveland.
I thought you called them a bunch of whores, liars, and thieves.
That was you who called them that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Hey, I think the Cubs could be, like, sneaky interesting this year.
Oh, what? They will be interesting.
Really?
I hope. You
Are
know
they
what?
Trained
I
for Shohei?
For? No, we got better players.
The Cubs don't want the GOAT. Yeah.
They're gonna be based on run prevention and defense. I hope we get a defense chant in Wrigley Field this year. Be awesome.
That'd be hilarious.
It would be hilarious.
You should go to a game and lead the chant. Defense!
Defense!
Monsters of the Midway are back.
That's right. It's like
bring
the
one
Bears.
Of those signs where it says D and then
the
fence. Defense.
I like it.
People forget they had the third best pitching staff in the second half of the season last year in the National League. We're going to build off that.
I did forget about
that. We're going to build.
I didn't know that was even a stat.
I certainly did not know that.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
That's because no one was paying attention except me and a couple of
How many of you the people Kugler. That were pitching on that pitching staff are back for them?
Quite a few, actually.
Yeah.
And then we added Jameson Taillon.
Of course, Jameson.
From the Yankees, who's had a really good spring training.
Oh. Josh, can you tell us anything about Jameson Taillon? Like
no.
Another team that he played on?
The Yankees.
Could you tell us that he's like a former top prospect?
He probably was. He's a baseball player in the major leagues. Of course he was a former top prospect.
Did he play for Boston
John,
College?
You should...
best team baseball.
Are you familiar with his history? Do you know that he had, like, I think testicular cancer that he came back from?
I believe so.
Oh!
Yeah.
Yep. He's a survivor? Hell yeah!
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 You should be a big fan of Jameson
I am
type.
Down with cancer. Screw
yeah,
cancer.
Yeah, see? We should all be Cubs fans because of this.
By the way,
striking out cancer.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing.
There you
Chicago.
Go. My Uncle Mark texts in, go Twins. There you go. Everyone just let us know who you're rooting for this year. 402-951-1620. Perfect. Rockies. There you go. Nick's a Rockies fan. They're going to wow. suck. They
Show sure a little are. More enthusiasm over there. Mm.
Rocky. They have a really nice stadium.
They do have a nice stadium.
Mm. I want to see a game.
I will give them that.
Has Grimm figured out that he can fly to Denver yet?
I have this figured out. I'm going to take a train because Union Station is only about a 13-minute walk from the ballpark.
That's another thing you missed last week. Nick hasn't been on a plane since he was like 9 or something.
You know what we should be checking? We should be checking the weekend schedule for September 9th and see if the Rockies are in town.
Oh, I'll look at that right now. Shafe, are you going to Boulder this year?
I'm planning to.
Hell yeah. We'll see you there.
The Boulder boys.
That'll be so much fun.
Yeah, I believe I walked like 2 miles to appear on your show.
Dude, that was a long walk.
Massive sweaty mess.
That was a long walk.
I wore dress shoes to our show, and they dug into my Achilles on the way. I'm not making that mistake this year. I'm wearing walking shoes. They are on the road.
Guys were in the auxiliary press box.
Yes,
if I remember.
With Severe. It was us two, Severe, and then some random Colorado guy.
That was an odd stadium to get around.
Yeah, John almost left. We got to a point where if we couldn't have found the press box, John was gonna, because they kept telling us to go to the wrong area. He was like, "I'm about to leave." I was like, "Wait, no, you're not gonna leave. We're gonna watch the game." And he's like, "I'm gonna leave." Thank God we found it within the next couple seconds.
He was going to book a train to go home because that's what the cool.
No, I was just going to go back to the hotel and watch it with all the other people that stayed behind there at the Embassy Suites.
Aren't you happy you stayed because we got to watch the good part at the stadium? And then we left and everything went to hell.
That's true.
We're walking out and we hear this huge cheer and we're like, I wonder what that's going to be as we listened on my phone.
Yep.
And then a Colorado touchdown.
And then a Colorado
flea
touchdown.
Flicker!
Yeah.
Oh, man. Bad game. Bad game.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was great.
The trip was fun.
It was a great trip.
It was a good trip. It was a really good trip at that moment,
though, I think we wanted to go home. When overreaction ended, we were done with Colorado. We went to that bad restaurant. The food sucked. We had an early flight the next day.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible.
Horrible. We're driving this time, I think.
That's right.
We'll just drive back.
That's right.
Football.
Well, Shafe, we'll make our plans later on.
Perfect. We got 5 months.
That's right. By then, you know, Cleveland will clinch their Central, and the Cubs will have clinched their Central.
Wow.
We'll have a whole month of non-stressful baseball just waiting to, you know, go to the playoffs and dominate.
Wow.
Then it'll be a rematch of 2016.
Wow.
It'll be great.
I would prefer never to see that again if we could.
Yeah.
As I plan to go to their series at the end of June, beginning of July. But
Good on you. Mm. All right, Shave. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Thanks.
All right, guys. Have a great one.
Bye,
there
Shafe.
He is, Mike Shafer of Husker 24/7. More on Dylan Raiola when we continue here. Sipple coming up later in the program and more.
The war on the sellout streak with Sipple.
Oh my God!
Remember how he? Remember?
Remember?
Uh-huh.
1620 The Zone.